Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for waiting. Welcome to the TomTom Second Quarter 2009 Analyst Conference Call. At this time, all our participants are in listen-only mode. We will be facilitating a question-and-answer session towards the end of today's prepared remarks, at which time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. If at any time during the call you require audio assistance, feel free to press star zero, and a conference coordinator will be happy to assist you. I would now like to hand the conference over to your host today, Mr. Richard Piekaar. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon and good morning to those of you joining from North America. Welcome to our conference call, in which we will discuss our financial results for the second quarter of 2009. With me today are Harold Goddijn, TomTom CEO, and Marina Wyatt, our CFO. By now, you should have received a copy of our earnings release, which was distributed earlier today. It is also available on our website. Additionally, this call is being broadcast live on the internet, and the recording of the call will be available shortly afterwards. As usual, I would like to point out that Safe Harbor applies. We will begin with Harold, who will discuss the market developments and the business review, followed by a more detailed look at the quarterly financial results for Marina. We will then take your questions. We will finish the call no later than 3:00 CET. I would now like to turn the call over to Harold.
Thank you very much, Richard, and good afternoon and good morning. In the second quarter, we delivered strong profitability and cash generation driven by new products, expected seasonal uplifts in P&D sales, but also tight management of costs and working capital. On the 17th of July, we concluded a successful capital raising together with the new net cash inflow from operating activities. We have substantially strengthened our balance sheet with over €500,000,000. We also started volume shipments of our first line-fitted car navigation product with Renault, and initial feedback from customers is encouraging. Our IQ Routes technology is gaining recognition as the only fact-based routing solution available for car drivers to choose efficient routes to their destination, and IQ Routes is now shipped in the majority of our products. Market conditions continue to be challenging, but so far this year, end-user demand has been in line with our expectations. We're making good progress with diversifying our revenue base, and our strengthened balance sheet enables us to focus on the continued execution of our strategy. In the second quarter, we saw end-user demand for P&D develop as expected, with a decline of the European market year-over-year of 12% and a growth of 2% in North America. The European market size was 3.8 million units, and North America market size was 3.7 million units. We grew our market share in Europe by one percentage point, both sequentially and year-on-year, to 45%. In North America, our market share was 18%, which is one percentage point less than the same period last year and the same as the previous quarter. In the quarter, we launched the TomTom XL Live, and with that, we're bringing our real-time services to the high-volume mid-range product family. The XL Live can be used in multiple countries with no extra cost for drivers when traveling abroad. At the end of the quarter, we had over 100,000 active connected devices with a subscription take-up rate of 30%. We're pleased with the progress of our HD traffic offering. The service itself is getting better, the integration with the device is more mature, and as a result, we've seen improved customer satisfaction and take-up rates. In the quarter, we continued the streamlining of Telia's operations and the integration of group technologies to increase operational efficiencies, to broaden the product offering, and to further increase the quality of content. As a result, the latest Multinet database release was again of higher quality whilst being produced at lower costs. In the quarter, Telia released HD traffic, up until that time only available to TomTom customers. there is a broader understanding in the market that the combination of IQ routes and HD traffic truly improves the quality of routing, saving drivers money, time and fuel. We're encouraged with our progress, have gained important insights about pricing and user expectations. Our goal is to open up embedded navigation to the mass market. Renault has started volume production of the Renault Clio with our line-fit navigation solution in April, and we have a positive reception by Renault and its customers. The product is also featuring in a major pan-European advertising campaign. We expect to ramp over the next months for new models, including the Megane, the Scenic, and the Laguna. And with this short update, I'm now handing over to Marina for a more detailed financial overview.
Thank you, Harold. Looking at the revenue analysis of the group on slide 8, the chart shows that non-PND revenue represented 25% of revenue in the quarter, compared to 17% on a pro forma basis in the same period last year. In absolute terms, non-PND revenue increased both year on year and sequentially to €92 million. The sequential increase came mainly from an increase in automotive revenue. Year-on-year third-party revenue in Teleatlas remained stable at €46 million. Teleatlas's other revenue showed an increase year-on-year and sequentially, mainly due to the increase in internet and wireless revenue, which offset the decline in PND and to a lesser extent in automotive-related licensing revenue. The chart on the upper right shows the average selling price of PNDs. The ASP increased sequentially to €112, which was 13% up. Year on year, the ASP decreased was 14%. We continue to expect that the rate of ASP decline in 2009 will be lower than the rate experienced in 2008. The chart on the bottom right shows PND volumes. In the second quarter, we shipped 2.5 million PNDs, a decrease of 20% year-on-year, but an increase of 73% sequentially. The sequential increase is explained by seasonality, new products, and a more balanced sell-in, sell-out relationship than seen in Q1. Turn to the earnings overview of the group. The gross margin for the group for the quarter was 51%, which is an increase of 1 percentage point sequentially and 1 percentage point compared to the pro forma second quarter results of last year. In the quarter, the total operating expenses, excluding restructuring charges, amounted to €129 million, an increase of €11 million compared to the first quarter. The sequential increase in OPEX was the result of an increase in marketing expenses of €5 million and also of €5 million in stock compensation expenses because of the impact of the higher share price in the quarter on our performance share plans. Year on year, pro forma operating expenses decreased by €28 million for the quarter. The operating result for the quarter, excluding one-off charges, increased by €69 million quarter on quarter to €59 million, which was 16% of revenue. The financial result came in at a charge of €32 million, made up of a net interest expense of €15 million for the quarter, payable against the bank debt on the balance sheet, and the other finance result was made up of a mostly unrealized loss on foreign exchange of €17 million, which arose mainly from FX hedging activities. The loss on the foreign exchange hedge instruments was mainly driven by the strengthening of the GB pound and a weaker US dollar against the euro during the quarter. The result before tax for the quarter was €28 million. The tax charge was €6.8 million, an effective tax rate of 24%. Fully diluted earnings per share were €0.14, down from €0.25 in the same quarter last year, and a loss of €0.22 in the previous quarter. Please note that for calculating the earnings per share, we've taken into account the dilutive effect of the rights issue. Diluted adjusted earnings per share for the quarter was 22 euro cents, compared to 37 euro cents for the same period in the prior year, and compared with a loss of 13 euro cents in the previous quarter. Now let's look at the operating expenses in more detail. In the first half of the year, we have reduced operating expenses by 64 million euros compared to the operating expenses on a pro forma basis in the first half of last year. Marketing expenses in Teleatlas have been brought to an absolute minimum, while marketing expenses for the TomTom business were reduced. R&D expenses decreased sequentially, and we continue to aggressively pursue all other opportunities to reduce costs, such as external contractors, temporary staff, and travel costs. We are well ahead of our targeted cost reduction plan, and we now expect to achieve savings on total operating expenses of 90 million euro for the full year on a pro forma basis. In relation to the cost-cutting program, we booked a one-off restructuring charge of 2.1 million euro in the quarter. If we look now at the cash flow overview, we had strong cash flow in the second quarter from operations of 98 million euros. The decrease in working capital was mainly driven by the sequential decrease in inventory and also an increase in trade payables. Cash flow from investing activities, which is basically CapEx, was lower at 12 million euro compared to 32 million euro in the previous quarter. Cash flow from financing activities mainly consisted of the receipt of 65.5 million euros from the private placement. Overall, cash balances in the quarter increased by 152 million euro, or 86 million if you take out the private placement proceeds. So a strong cash generative quarter. If we then turn to look at the borrowing situation, as you're well aware, towards the end of the quarter we announced an equity offering which we successfully completed on July the 17th. And the proceeds of the equity offering, the net proceeds, are approximately 400 million euro, of which 65.5 million was received before June the 30th. The full net proceeds of the offering will be used to pay down debt. And post the rights issue, or post the equity issue, our pro forma net debt is reduced to approximately 672 million euro. The repayment schedule and the covenants, as announced in our press release on June the 14th, are shown on this slide as well to give you a complete overview of the credit facility. Finally, let's turn to the balance sheet. As usual, trade receivables increased in the quarter for seasonal reasons. As a result of the focus on working capital, inventory in the quarter reduced to 64 million euro, which was down from 145 million at the end of 2008 and 97 million at the end of the previous quarter. Trade payables increased to 143 million euro compared to 70 million euro in the previous quarter because of the increase in creditor days. The cash position at the end of the quarter was 423 million euro compared to 270 million at the start of the quarter. The balance sheet shows borrowings of 1.394 billion euro made up of the acquisition debt net of related transaction costs. And then on the right-hand side of this slide, we've shown a pro forma balance sheet which reflects the estimated full effect of the equity issue. Pro forma shareholders' equity is now 905 million euro, up from 482 million euros at the end of the previous quarter. Let me just make a couple of comments on the outlook. So far this year, end user demand both in the European and North American PND markets developed in line with our expectations. In the second half of the year, we expect sales to be strongly weighted towards the fourth quarter, as we have seen in previous years. And as discussed, are ahead of our plans with our cost reduction program, and accordingly we have increased our savings target to €90 million from €60 million year on year on a pro forma basis. That concludes the formal part of the presentation, and we'd now like to start with the Q&A session.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll take the first question from Simon Schaefer from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks so much. Just my first question would just be on the third-party mat sales. Not a lot of year-over-year growth there. Could you, Marina, maybe we can just go through as to when you would expect that to see signs of life in terms of year-over-year growth? And I guess the same question would be the case for the services part of the business, which actually was seeing some very good revenue growth year-over-year. The auto stuff seems to be coming through. So any sort of expectation that you could set for the newer parts of the business, and then also as to when the third-party map sales would also look to start to regrow. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what's going on in the TeleAtlas third-party map sales, what we see is we've got growth, strong growth coming through on the internet and mobile side, but you know, that is being held back by the decline in PNDs, and that's really, you know, those are the two key drivers of what is going on there. In the second half of the year, you know, PND sales are weighted towards the second half of the year in any case. So that's going to drive growth in TeleAtlas in the second half. And, you know, we see internet and mobile clearly as a growing revenue stream in TeleAtlas. And, you know, automotive clearly is affected by the macroeconomic conditions, but over time, you know, it's very much our strategy to grow the market share of TeleAtlas in the automotive space. Timing-wise, you know, I think short-term in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter, we'll see the PND part of this business increasing. And if we look at the other revenue in the, you know, the non-TeleAtlas part, if you like, as I said, we've seen that increase sequentially from $31 million to $47 million. I said the biggest part of that is coming from automotive because, you know, in the quarter we started to ship the Renault automotive product for the first time, and that's driven quite a lot of that. But in addition, we have growth coming through from the maps sales, you know, to the installed base and map subscriptions, a little bit of service revenue also coming through in there. So, you know, it's early days, but the signs are encouraging in terms of, you know, those other revenue streams starting to develop.
Thanks. Any sort of targets as to what percentage of those new product launches from Renault may be TomTom equipped? Any sort of percentage guesses?
The product is being rolled out. It's already in the Clio, and it will go into the Megane, Scenic, and Laguna in the second half of the year. In some countries, in the Clio, it is standard. In some, it's an add-on extra. You know, it's in terms of the take rate at this stage, it's too early to say, but it's certainly being rolled out pretty widely.
Understood. Thanks. And my second question really has to do with market share. Obviously, you've stated the aim in the past in terms of wanting to capture some share in the U.S. On a year-over-year basis, that hasn't happened. And at the same time, your inventory seems low, perhaps too low, as you go into the third quarter if you really see some retail pull-through. So I was wondering as to whether you could maybe elaborate as to your positioning in the U.S. and how you look at that going forward. Thank you.
Simon, if I look at the situation in the U.S., what we have seen is a strengthening in our distribution. We had more SKUs, more shelf space starting in the second quarter, but we have also encountered strong price reduction from competition in the North American market, and we have elected not to follow those price declines. As a result of that, we have not been able to grow our share, but the price difference between us and the nearest competitor has decreased. If I look at the second half, it's quite difficult to give an estimate of where the market share will end up, but we do believe it will go up in the second half of 2009. Your comment on the inventory side, yes, you're right. We've run a tight ship. Inventory levels are low, but they are not too low. And we are replenishing, and goods are coming in and going out on a normal basis. And we're not suffering from any shortages in the channel.
Mr. Thanks, Howard. Thank you.
Next question comes from Stuart Jeffrey from Nomura.
Hi there. Thank you. You've done very well in this quarter in terms of costs, but P&D volume is still pretty flat. I didn't want to get into near-term trends in P&D, but rather perhaps get Harold's view on long-term dynamics in the P&D market. Obviously, lots of moving parts, but perhaps you could touch on how you see long-term dynamics in P&D play out, and perhaps talk a little bit about replacement sales, how that's developing, and whether reducing your marketing spend at this point is going to help people understand and appreciate some of the new services you're pushing, and whether you need to start kicking up your marketing spend in order to drive replacement going forward.
Sure, thank you. Despite the strong economic downturn, we're quite encouraged that the overall demand for our products, both in Europe and North America, has been held up quite reasonably. We have been affected, but the decline in Europe is kind of manageable. And there's some growth in North America, be it small. But I think the overall sector is looking good. The products are getting better. We can see that we're making good progress in the routing. We're making good progress in HD traffic. It's getting better and better integrated in our products as well. And we see a shift in usage happening slowly but surely, where navigation devices are more and more used as a more dynamic, always-on extra information source in a car. And that is a positive development. Is it going fast enough, and would it help if we spent more money on advertising? I think we can sit it through in 2009 as we are doing. I think it's the market share is good in Europe, market awareness, brand awareness is good, so we don't think we are restricted in getting our message across in this year. We're still investing in the brand in the US. That is continuing, be it at lower levels than we were used to, but we don't feel at this stage that the brand is suffering from a reduced marketing expenditure.
And just on the replacement dynamic, do you have any sense for what percentage of sales are now replacement sales?
No, it is not that easy to get reliable numbers on that. But the impression is that an increasing percentage, and some of the evidence, some of the research suggests that it is up to 30% of customers that are in the market to buy a P&D have previously owned or bought a P&D.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Nicholas von Stackelberg from Fal Oppenheim.
Thanks for taking my question. Great cash flow in the quarter. Congratulations. My question is on the elasticity of your dynamic traffic data offering. Maybe it's early days to talk about this, but have you trialed decreasing the price? And if so, what has been the impact on take rates?
Nicholas, we have not tried that so far. And we're not planning to do that this year. We are playing a little bit with the initial period, the initial free period that comes with the device, which we're varying from 0 months to 6 months, see what kind of effect that has. But we're not planning to get the prices for subscription down. Our feeling is that it's too early. There's still too much to be done in other areas to improve the quality of the offering and the quality of the overall user experience. We want to do that first, get a larger installed base. We're quite happy the way it's going, and we're quite happy with the user satisfaction rates. But there's still more to be done.
And we've
chosen to do that first before we start playing with the monthly subscription rate.
A quick follow-up, if I may. Could you talk to the ASP dynamics as you look into the third quarter? In Q2, you mentioned that less promotional activity was a source for the sequential increase in ASP. And maybe talk about it in the context of your product lineup going into Q3. Thank you.
Yeah, the ASP went up in Q2 because it was a new product range, new pricing, with very little promotional activity, which is very different to, you know, the dynamic in Q1. That will extend really into Q3, and you know, the environment for Q3 for ASP should be one where you see ASPs kind of flat to down a little, but more of the same really with Q2. And then in Q4 is when you see the impact of the holiday season, more US sales in the mix, and, you know, lower ASPs. So, you know, a relatively usual pattern that you've seen from us before.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Willem Giller from Royal Bank of Scotland.
Yeah, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, man.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
I've got two questions basically. The first one is on CapEx and what kind of plans you have for the future. We are looking at a CapEx of around about 11 million for the quarter, which compares to, let's say, a normal level of around about 80 to 90 million per annum. So that's pretty low at the moment. Can you, let's say, run us through what should be a normal level of CapEx once the biggest tension out of your P&L is gone? And also maybe in relation to that, what kind of plans you have, in particular on HD traffic in the US. Are you currently using Inrix, but I can imagine you want to build your own platform in due time. So maybe get us a bit of an update on how that is progressing and how that might impact a CapEx program on your side. And then the second question would be on market share. You particularly mentioned your market share in the US is under pressure due to ASP reductions from competitors. Can you talk us through the market share development of TomTom in value rather than in units in the US?
Let me take the first question on CapEx. Year to date, so in the first half of the year, our CapEx spend is 44 million. So I think thinking about, you know, the 80 to 100 million guidance on CapEx that, you know, we usually talk about, it's fair to say we'll be in that same ballpark for the full year. It's particularly low in Q2, but that, you know, that tends to happen. You get, it's a bit lumpy. So that's the first question on CapEx. I think in terms of our plans in the US for HD traffic, probably best if Harold takes that one.
Yeah, we are still in discussions. Breakthrough yet. But we are still looking at opportunities to introduce HD traffic in the US as well. But as soon as we have news there, we obviously will come out with that as soon as practical.
And will there be more of a similar type of system that you have in Europe, or is there going to be a significant difference in the US market versus the European market in this respect?
Well, the core of the system would be the same, so making use of cell data, cell phone data that are moving around the network, that gives you a very good basis, a very good basic traffic information service. And then what we tend to do is enrich that source of floating cell phones with other sources, journalistic data, GPS trace data, and so on and so forth. We will be looking at a similar system, but it is difficult to say how the different components will fuse together. And it's also much more challenging in the U.S. to get a pan-continental coverage in one go. So we will be looking at the major metropolitan areas, but not a fully covering traffic information service at this stage.
Okay, and on the market share?
Yeah, as I said, market share in units and in value is approximately the same. So 80% in volume, 18% in value. Traditionally, we had in value a slightly lower percentage market share, but because we have chosen not to follow a quite aggressive pricing in the U.S., we have relatively increased the value share of sales in North America.
Okay, thanks.
Next question comes from Niels de Swart from Fortis Bank. Please go ahead.
Niels Swart, Fortis Bank, Nederland. I've got a question on the progress of your cost-cutting program. You mentioned that operating expenses were down 64 million euros in the first half of this year compared to the 90 million target you now have. Does that imply that your second half operating cost base would decline by, well, roughly some 30 million compared to last year, or should we interpret it differently?
No, that's how you should interpret it. So overall, for the full year, will be 90 million lower than last year.
Will be 90 million lower than last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
And why? Because by the second half of last year, we had started to rein back cost.
Yeah.
So it slows down.
Yeah, that's clear. It's clear that in terms of marketing expenses, you're now settling on this type of new reality in terms of what your needs are for marketing expenses. Previously, you targeted, if I remember correctly, some 8% of revenues. Is there some new ballpark range you are targeting currently we can use for modeling?
Well, first of all, you need to think about consumer revenue. And, you know, we're a broader group than we used to be.
Yeah, sure.
We do not need to invest in buffer line advertising and marketing in TeleAtlas. And, you know, in our business-to-business companies, you know, the needs are less. For the consumer business as a whole, you know, we're going through a period at the moment where, you know, there isn't an awful lot of advertising activity going on from many companies. So, you know, it's realistic to have reduced that level. And as a percentage of revenue going forwards, I think we need to see how the markets develop before we, you know, come up with a sort of concrete position on that, because I wouldn't feel comfortable with giving you a percentage right now.
Okay, thank you. And a final question on gross margin. You just discussed your rough ASP expectations for the third quarter. What should we expect for gross margin? I mean, last year we saw a strong increase quarter on quarter in Q3. Should we still expect that for Q3 this year as well, or should it be a bit lower based on your ASP assumptions or expectations?
I would plan flat.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from Andre Krenia from Jefferies International.
Thank you for taking my question. Can you provide any specifics on the navigation app for iPhone attach rates that is both software and CarKit? And along the same lines, if you could give us an insight on how many iPhones of last version have upgraded to 3.0 OS, and any chance you'll sell your CarKit through Apple stores. Thank you.
Enver, thank you. This is Harold. I can't give you anything that you're asking for. It's too early. We don't have the statistics, and we just don't know. We need to launch first. That's planned for the summer. That is on track. But it's only after a period after the launch that we can start thinking about attachment rate, take-up rate, and sales of the cradle. The cradle itself we will distribute from our own website and through retail, and hopefully that will include Apple stores. But we have not. We can't provide more clarity on that subject at this stage.
Okay, thanks.
Next question comes from Alexander Peterc from Exxon BNP Paribas.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my question. I'd just like to understand the evolution of your guidance a little bit here. We started the year with a specific guidance for the U.S. and European markets. Then after a while, visibility was too low, so they refrained from guidance, and now you just say that things are in line with your expectations. Can you say how that stacks against the consensus and whether you have more or less visibility than last time you spoke to us? Thanks.
I would say that our position is exactly the same as it was at the end of Q1. So I think, you know, from that, what you read into that is, you know, we don't reiterate, we don't walk away. There's no reason for any change, but visibility is limited. And, you know, we remain cautious as a result about the second half of the year and in giving any firmer guidance than this right now.
Okay, then just a second small question would be on gross margins. Given the very good performance in terms of ASPs and given all the new launches you've had that were successful in this quarter, how come we can't see more of an effect on gross margins? What are the dynamics there?
Basically what you see... Let me step back a bit. I think the important takeaway is that in the consumer division driven by PNDs, you know, our 40% gross margin target, you know, and that's on an apples-to-apples basis with how we used to measure it in the past, it remains intact. It remains the way we plan the business, and it is what we deliver when we launch products into the market and for some time after that. So, you know, I think there's no change there. The model remains valid.
Okay, thanks.
Next question comes from Mark Swatzenberg from ING.
Yes, good afternoon. A couple of questions left from my side. First of all, I know visibility is very low, but could you give us a bit of an indication how the trend was through the quarter? Did you see maybe a bit of better June due to destocking maybe ending somewhere halfway the quarter? Did you get any sense of the current trends?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we look back at the second quarter, the trends, you know, in terms of our revenue got stronger as the quarter went on. But you would normally expect that through seasonality and the timing of the product launches anyway. So that did happen.
Are we talking about year-on-year trends?
No, in terms of how our revenues developed in the quarter. If that's answering your question.
I know there's seasonality in there, so maybe you could stick to maybe year-on-year comparison. Did you see a bit of, in number of PNDs, a bit of an improving or bottoming trend towards the end of the quarter?
I couldn't answer that question exactly. I mean, in terms of our own expectations, I'd say things got better as the quarter went on, but in comparing month-on-month with the quarters in the previous year, you get distortions because of the timing of new product introductions, so it's difficult to read too much into that.
That's true. Maybe another one on the live subscriptions. Could you give us an indication how many paying customers you have on the live services?
What we have and what we have said in our press release is that we have 100,000 activated devices out in the channel with live services. And what we're seeing on subscription rates as we're measuring them is a take-up rate of around 30%.
But so, if it's in the thousands, there's obviously still a lot of them in the trial period.
Exactly. That's activated devices. So, you know, early days.
Okay, and then maybe a final one also on the cost savings. You mentioned 64 million in the first half, 26 million then to come in the second half. But are we talking about real actual numbers here, or are we talking about the run rate? Because then we would also get a sort of knockover effect into 2010. If you ship out another 26 in the second half, that means also another 26 maybe then for next year. Could you maybe explain a bit more there?
Well, I mean, for next year we haven't, it's too early to give predictions on operating expenses. What I'm trying to say is that at the end of this year, if you measure the operating expenses for 2009 and compare that absolute number with the absolute number for 2008 on a pro forma basis, we expect the 2009 number to be about 90 million lower, which of course sets us up for a lower level of OPEX, you know, as we go into 2010. But then we need to look at, you know, what are the important areas where we need to invest going forwards, and, you know, how do we tweak and change things around.
Yeah, so, how sustainable is the R&D at current levels? Do we see probably a rise in R&D expenses for 2010?
Again, it's too, at this stage, I wouldn't like to give predictions on that. I'd say, you know, we have a good level of resource on the in the research and development teams, but you know, we need to still go through our planning cycle for next year to make final decisions as to you know, what level we want to run that at. But you know, I don't see needs at this stage. You know, nothing is saying to me there is a need for you know, dramatic increases there.
And then the final one on your payables, how sustainable is that level? Because it has increased quite a bit. Should we expect that to go down second half?
We've had a benefit in Q2 because, you know, at the start of this year, we moved our suppliers onto 60-day payment terms. And, you know, the most important of those suppliers are our manufacturing partners, who were previously on 30 days. So, you know, that really fed through in Q2, because in Q1 we didn't, you know, make a high level of purchasing at all. So that fed through. So we've had a bit of a benefit from that. But going forwards now, the way to model our trade payables line is on 60-day payment terms.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from Jonathan Singh from Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hey, Reid. Hey, Harold. Just looking to understand more about the gross margin dynamics. I mean, 40% gross margin is a good achievement, given the unit declines. I guess, what were the reasons for such a strong gross margin? Was it you were really screwing down your component supplies? Was it was there an FX benefit there? Just some more color on what the real drivers of the gross margin.
The gross margin is the gross margin reflecting the majority of sales coming from new products in the quarter, which have been, you know, newly developed to meet particular price points in the market and designed with a 40% gross margin in mind. So, you know, what you tend to see is for the first 6 months or so with a new product, you know, the pricing is relatively stable. In Q4, you know, there'll be a lot of promotional activity, and there's every chance our gross margin will come down in Q4. But in Q2 and Q3, you know, that 40 points of margin is you know, intact, and it's really, you know, the extension of the model we've had in building our products in the past. There's a little bit of gain in on the FX line, you know, FX in terms of our gross margin compared with Q1, but it's not that significant.
And just kind of picking up on the 40% thing, I mean, in the past you said your model is 40% gross margins, 20% operating margins. You're kind of saying that it's, you aim for 40% margin when the product launches and gross margin at the peak. Is there a kind of slight shift in body language there? I mean, can you reconcile
that? No, not really. I'd say, you know, overall, that's how we plan the business.
capital.
And just kind of FX gains, I mean, are these, I think there clearly is an FX benefit given you have much more costs in dollars than you have revenues. If you do get those benefits, are they, do you think these sustainable, or do these get priced out as new devices come in and they're repriced at the kind of the going rate?
I think the way to think about it is we're continuously working to always deliver 40 points of gross margin, you know, across our consumer business.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, the first quarter of this year, we were more like in the mid-30s because, you know, a lot of Q1 was characterized by promotional activity and clearing down of the old lines and inventory from Q4. So that affected our gross margin, and you know, sometimes you get that dynamic in Q1, sometimes you don't. But generally we plan the business around 40%. Of course, the holiday season, particularly in the US, and Black Friday, depending on how big a piece of our business that is, can also pull that margin down under 40% as well. But overall, kind of for the year as a whole, we plan on 40%.
Thanks very much.
Next question comes from Malvika Gupta from JP Morgan.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to check, do you expect to be impacted by the component pressures similar to what Nokia and Apple have indicated? And what do you think the impact on gross margin will be from this?
Yeah, we see some strengthening in some parts of the component market, but it's not something that we are worried about yet. So I don't expect an impact on our gross margin in the second half as a result of those firming prices.
Okay.
I think to, you know, we've got a bit of benefit from currency. We've probably got some stress in some particular components, but offsetting items elsewhere, so all in all, flat.
Okay. If I can follow up. Of your lineup by the year end, I mean, what percentage do you think would be with the connectivity on them?
Yeah, difficult to say. It's, you know, our connected devices are not available everywhere. They're only in the UK, Germany, France, the Netherlands, and Switzerland. We have recently moved connectivity to the mid-range. That will have a positive effect of the percentage of devices that will have connectivity built in. But it's too early to say what the trend will be towards the end of the year.
And how many of the offered models is this on right now?
We have it in the top range, so in the Go range, and we have recently introduced it in a mid-range, which is the XL.
Okay.
And then they come in normally in two different product variants. So in total, I think three or four SKUs that now have connectivity built in.
And I think importantly, you know, the mid-range is a much higher volume part of our business than the high end. So, you know, we're really pushing to get connectivity more widely out there in the market.
Fair enough. And if I can follow up, the 30% subscription rate that we've been seeing, has that been stable over time, so, I mean, based on what we've seen so far? Has that been stable, you know, based on what we've seen so far?
It's notched up a little bit, and we see that happening as the total product offering in the is maturing. So the it's not where we want it to be yet. I think it's a reasonable start, but we can do more to make the product better, more attractive, and communicate the benefits of those. Of that connectivity and improved quality of the routing that comes with it, we can do more to explain that better.
Okay. And if we can just shift gears quickly to the iPhone product, is that expected to be launched simultaneously in the US and in Europe?
Yes, it is.
Fair enough. Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from Robert Owens from Castlenove.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Just a couple of quick ones on... just a bit of color maybe on the inventory channel and how you're seeing that at the moment compared to previous quarters, and any difference in Europe and North America, and then a couple of follow-ups.
Yeah, so was that inventory in the channel, did you say?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think as we go into Q3 now, we're in a relatively stable and good shape position in inventory in the channel, both in Europe and North America now. You know, we saw some destocking probably still going on early in Q2, but that's settled down. And, you know, we feel now things are, you know, relatively stable. So, you know, I think that's our best view on that at the moment.
Okay. And then in terms of margins within the auto segment, did that have any noticeable impact on Q2? And how do you see that going forward?
Margins in the automotive segment, in Q2, no, it didn't have any significant impact because, you know, we're at an early stage with that business right now, and you can see that, you know, the revenue is part of other revenue and it's relatively modest. You know, what we see as a model for the automotive business is one where, you know, over the longer term, we would like our automotive business to kind of deliver at an EBIT level of around 20% of revenue. But, you know, that's going to take a while to get to some volume, you know, much more volume, more customers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's very much a medium-term target for the business. One thing I would say is I would expect, though, that how the model will shake out for the automotive business is one where gross margins will be lower, but then there will be less spend below the gross margin line on marketing and advertising. And, you know, eventually as the model matures, you know, we move towards that 20% EBIT target.
Okay, and then just very quickly, one follow-up. You said you were looking for flat operating margins in Q3, is that right? And then how should we look at Q4?
What I actually said was flat gross margins.
Okay.
In Q3. But, you know, in terms of thinking about the OPEX side of the business, you know, that you won't see any big movement on that in Q3. As we go into Q4, you know, you need to think about, as I said, you know, higher volumes, lower ASPs, mm-hmm. lower gross margin, you know, and there'll be higher advertising spend as well in the fourth quarter.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from Jonathan Goldberg from Deutsche Bank.
Hi, thanks. Just real quick, can we talk a little bit about trends we're seeing at PolyAtlas? Any color you could give us there would be helpful. And also, could you just talk a little bit about the competitive landscape there? Are you seeing a change in behavior by the smartphone vendors? Are they increasingly coming to you rather than go to NAVTEQ as part of one of the big competitors? Thanks.
Sorry, Jonathan, I missed the first half of your question. I apologize.
Could you just talk about overall, give us some more color on trends at PolyAtlas?
Yeah. Okay, I think what we've seen on the revenue side for PolyAtlas in the first quarter is that third-party income from P&D vendors was down, automotive was relatively flat, and other income, and predominantly wireless and internet has shown growth. Overall, third-party income was flat on that side. What we did manage to achieve in TeleAtlas is that we managed to reduce costs substantially, and whilst doing that, we have improved our capacity to add changes to the map and improve the map. So we are starting to see some of the benefits that we anticipated, and that is that we can produce better maps, publish them more frequently, and produce them at lower cost. We're not there yet. It will take more time to fully implement those new production methodologies and develop the tools that make a lot of the map making process a more automated one. but we start to see some effects coming through. We are encouraged by the results so far. We've been able to extract new attributes from community feedback, like slope data, more accurate geometry, reliable speed profiles, attributes that were previously not available, and we can develop them and extract them from the community input at relatively low cost. So some of the benefits that we anticipated were available are coming through, more to come.
Great, thank you.
Next question comes from Nicholas von Stackelberg from Saal Oppenheim.
Yes, thanks for taking my follow-up question, which is on the restructuring going forward, rather the additional cost cuts. Should we assume any restructuring costs related to that? And if so, could you give us an indication of how important these might be?
I think what I would say is the majority of the restructuring charges have been booked. You'll see, you know, in this quarter we put through just over €2 million. I would expect that you might see a little bit trickling through in Q3 and Q4, you know, as further, you know, opportunities to do things like merge offices and, you know, those sorts of savings are found. But the lion's share of the restructuring costs have been taken now.
Okay. And then also, could you give us a steer on a line in your P&L that has been very, very volatile, the one related to options expenses?
Yeah.
At the end of June, you issued another batch of new options, 5.9 million. I can't recall the strike price, but it must have been fairly low compared to the old options. So any steer, any way to get our hands around that line item? Thank you.
Yes, the way it works is, I mean, we've had, because of the weak performance of our share price, we've had kind of zero charge going through in our P&L in Q1 this year. In Q2, we saw the combined impact of the new stock option grant being made for 2009, together with the impact on our cash settled performance share plan, which is what we were using in 2007 and 2008. You know, that's cash settled, and when the share price goes up, that increases a little bit. But the main impact comes from the stock option plan, and so as we go forwards now, you will expect to see a few million euros coming through each quarter, because that, you know, the charge that goes through the P&L is fixed on that, for the stock option plan at the time of grant.
Okay, so if we used Q2 as a run rate, would that be a bit too high?
No, not necessarily, because the stock option grant was done in June. I need to come back to you and give you more detailed guidance on what to use there, because I don't have that to hand, I'm afraid.
Okay, and then a final one as a follow-up to the component question asked earlier. You mentioned that there are some offsetting items, but could you possibly just highlight those items where you see component costs rising?
Yeah, I mean, if we talk from our people on the supply chain side, it varies a little bit, but, you know, we have at some points, you know, they talk about the price of screens being, you know, under some stress, which means, you know, that there is some pressure, upwards pressure there, you know, and that would be the main one that I'm aware of.
Nothing on flash, non-flash memory, does that come in?
I don't know, nothing that I've heard about there, no.
Thank you very much.
Next question comes from Felicity Smith from Bedlam Asset Management.
Thank you. I just wondered, how close are you to signing any more automotive customers, or are they waiting to see what the take-up is on the Renault models?
What we're doing in the automotive industry is two things. We are licensing our maps to a number of established players, including BMW and Daimler and what have you.
And with Renault, we supply them with the full navigation stack and the hardware. If you're referring to the latter type of deal, so selling complete solutions, we have nothing to announce other than the Renault deal. But we are in discussions with a number of car manufacturers in the industry.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference question and answer session. I'd now like to hand the conference back over to your host for any additional closing remarks.
Well, thank you very much. This ends the Q2 investor conference call. Thank you all very much for your attention and wish you all a pleasant day.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.